We are going to be talking DIY this afternoon. So if you've got a question for Angelo, please send us an email to pippah@capetalk.co.za. Send an SMS to 31567. You can also tweet us at Cape Talk or leave your message as a voice note on 072-567-1567. It is not only a general DIY segment today. It's going to take a very specific focus. But before I introduce our second guest, let's say hello to Angelo. 2 days in a row. Lovely to have you with us again.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, and yourself?
I brought a guest.
Is Enzo with you?
Hey,
fantastic. We have a dog back in the studio for the first time since March. Things are looking up. Okay. I'll give him a pat in the break, I promise. Angelo is, of course, representing IPMT Remedial Building Consultants and Paint Project Management. And it's always great to have him with us to tackle your general DIY queries. But today, before we get to the open line, we want to take a closer look at emergencies around the home and how to respond to them. From kitchen fires to burst geysers, even gas leaks. I hope you never have to deal with them. But if they do happen, how do you deal with them in order to prevent injury and serious damage? To help us answer those questions, I'm delighted to welcome back to the show Orlando Luis, who is the CEO of Brights Hardware. Orlando, great to have you with us again.
Hi there, Pippa. Great to be on the show again. Thank you.
And look, Angelo is the man who deals with fixing things after these kind of accidents have happened. So I'm sure he's got a lot of experience of how commonly they can happen. Angelo, maybe a comment to get us started. You never plan for them, but they happen all too readily, don't they?
Okay. So they happen as very often. I think people don't realize how often it is. It's one of those things that can never happen to me. And guess what? It happened to me last week.
Tell us
yeah?
more.
Okay. One of a building we were working on caught fire.
My goodness.
Yep. And luckily for lockdown, there was no there were no tenants, but one of the buildings, the roof caught fire. It was luckily all preparation was done. We had the fire extinguishers. We had the health and safety sheet file. We had prepared for the worst and we still couldn't control it.
How, I mean, I'm glad to see that you're here in one piece to tell the tale. Angela, I mean, how extensive was the damage?
Well, no,
and I hope there was no injury.
No injury. Yeah. One guy went to hospital
smoke inhalation.
Smoke inhalation, and the roof is gone, and the tenants' fittings are all destroyed. So, guys, even if you do prepare, and sometimes it gets out of control, you can't prepare for everything. Mm-hmm. But if you don't prepare, it can be, and more than likely will be, 100% worse than what you can imagine.
So preparation is key. Orlando, I'm sure you would agree with that. A lot of this is knowing what to do and who to ask for help the minute that the situation starts, really.
No, definitely. Prevention is better than cure always. And you must have the fire extinguishers and the first aid kits no matter what, because whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and you have to be able to be ready for it. So preparation is everything.
What does that actually mean in terms of preparation? Is it about having a list of phone numbers up on the fridge? Is it about basic safety equipment that you should have in place? Orlando, what does it mean to you?
Well, to me, definitely having certain preliminary, like extinguishers or fire blankets and things like that located or well located in any building is good to have. But then the emergency numbers are essential too. So as soon as you can do your best to try to put it under control or to remove the source or remove the fuel that it needs to burn or the oxygen or whatever it is that you can remove it as a starting point, thereafter to have the contact numbers on a fridge or somewhere readily available to contact is definitely your next solution, because the quicker you can contact somebody who can assist you and is trained to do so, the better or the more safer you're going to be in the long run.
Okay, I think the one that probably scares people the most is fire. So should we start with that, and we'll work through a couple of the common issues and what sort of preparation is needed and equipment is needed to deal with them. Let's start with fire, and the most common place a fire will happen in the average home is going to be in the kitchen. Things go wrong. You forget a pot of oil on the stove. You have a power failure and you forget that there was a plate on the stove. Yeah. And when it comes back on 2.5 hours later, things go wrong. Luis, what in your mind is the immediate response to the sight of flames in the kitchen or anywhere else in the house for that matter?
We'll definitely try and switch off the source, like electricity, for example, or the fuel. But normally it needs to have air, it needs to have fuel to burn, and it needs to have a source of power that gives it that ability to burn. So by switching the power off first would be the first thing to do if there is a fire on a stove, for example. If it's not because of an electrical item, then the next thing to do is to try to smother it or to extinguish it using the fire extinguisher. But always take away the source that gives it the power to do the damage that it's doing is always the thing to look at.
Angelo, that's important advice, because I think a lot of people get to the smothering and don't think to stop the thing that's feeding the fire.
I think the first thing, always one of the things, is to delegate and to get someone to turn off the electricity. That's important. Okay. But what's also important is that it's no use throwing water on an oil fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you have to, I know everyone goes into a panic. I mean, you think your house is burning, everything you own. So you're in a panic, but you have to try and identify A, the source, B, if it was a pan that left with oil and it started to burn, because, you know, you can't just dump water on the stuff. So a blanket can work, a fire extinguisher. You need those type of things in your home. That being said, a fire extinguisher needs to be serviced.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a yearly service, and you have to have them. I mean, I've got one for every room in our house.
Really?
We have, yeah.
That many?
Because we've got a thatch roof as well.
Yeah, that makes
but,
a lot of sense.
But you really, it's essential. It's an essential item. And as we should say, have a fire blanket. Just having these little things around can save you, will increase the percentage of you saving or stopping the fire. You know, I don't know how many fold, but
getting out of control. Yeah. I mean, Angela said something very important there. Most people's response to fire is to pour water on it, but that's not going to work on a grease fire. What's the best way to deal with an oil or grease based fire?
Well, again, the fire extinguishers that we sell are obviously either made out of CO2 extinguishers, or otherwise they are powder, which is designed to kill the fire that are the essential ones that occur. So carbon dioxide is the main one that we do for that kind of a fire. Obviously, don't go get the hose or find any other form of killing the fire. Just make use of the fire blanket, which we also sell, and the fire extinguishers, which have CO2 in them, are very good for those purposes. Where it's an electrical fire, CO2 is the best option to use as extinguisher.
Okay, so good things to invest in: fire extinguishers as well as a fire blanket to have on hand if needed. Okay, from fire, let's go to the other one that freaks people out probably the most, and that's the opposite. It's the flood scenario. It's a leaking something. It's a burst pipe with water pouring through the roof and dripping onto your appliances, etc. Angela, I mean, also very, very common, isn't it?
It happens all the time. People go away, the bath runs over, the next thing you know, everything is underwater. Guys, the first thing is you go and you turn off the water. You have to, if you can't get to the bath or wherever it's coming from, get to the main stopcock and turn it off. Those are things you need to know when you have a house, where the emergency items are. So, for example, if you've got a thatch house and you've got a sprinkler system on, you need to know where the button is to turn that off. And everyone in the family needs to know, you know.
That's a good point,
So those are the first point is switch off the source. In other words, if the water is running, stop the water.
Orlando, I mean, let's add to that, particularly geysers are often the source of flooding in the house, the broken or burst geyser. And I think most of us by now are aware of the fact that it's an item that does have a limited lifespan. And unfortunately, the lifespan seems to get a little bit shorter with every passing generation of them. Any tips on making the most of the geyser you've got and protecting against this kind of emergency?
No, definitely having a drip tray installed. Some of the older installations never had drip trays installed, as well as the different valves have got relief outlets. And these relief outlets before used to be indicated that they could relief into the drip tray. But nowadays they're indicating that the regulation says that each relief valve or each inlet valve should have a separate relief going to the outside of the roof space to ensure that, in case even sometimes you can have a geyser that bursts and then it bursts so much water and maybe the drip tray doesn't let out enough water that it still spills over onto your roof. So make sure that you get a plumber to ensure that all your outlets for safety valves or for inlet valves are all running with separate piping to the side of your roof to ensure that they relief separately. And then your drip tray, which has got a bigger outlet, make sure that is also going and it's well secured. That it's going also to the side of your roof, and then ensure that the drip tray is sufficient or located in a good position that it's covering the geyser completely and there's nothing sticking over where it could burst and flood the roof itself. Make sure that that's all done correctly.
Okay, thanks for the advice. Now, the next emergency is not necessarily the life-threatening kind that a flood or a fire is, but it's the one that is the most unpleasant to have in the house, and that is a blocked toilet, an overflowing drain, and the like. Angela, let's start with you. I mean, we've had lots of recommendations on things to unblock pipes that are stuck, but the toilet itself is a really bad one.
Yes, okay. Guys, I mean, you know, stuff does happen sometimes, and these toilets do get blocked, and, you know, it depends on how heavy-handed some people are with the toilet paper as well, but mm-hmm. various things happen, you know, aging of pipes, etc. So many things can happen. It's a difficult one because, you know, sometimes you need a ramming rod to try, but the neck of the pipe can be difficult so this, it's a difficult one to, that's for me something that I would simply say it's time to get
call a plumber
in and deal with it. Close the door. Don't let anyone in. We don't want any surprises floating down the passageway. So I would just get a plumber in. I've never actually had to unblock other than those old little plungers,
the
old-fashioned plungers.
Yeah.
I've never had to do that. To me, it's more something that I would just phone the professional
for. You would outsource. Mm. For a minor blockage, I mean, we've said this many, many times before. If you've got a kitchen drain that's smelling a little bit icky and is a bit blocked up, some bicarb and vinegar is a wonderful combination.
That works. There's new hydraulic pumps, the plungers that you sort of just pump it and it's great. It really looks a nice piece of, looks like a good piece of plastic equipment as well. So, and then there are a lot of drain cleaners, drain busters, stuff that you can actually just, that exert high pressure and exert materials, product down there that do clean and open up stuff. You know, for example, washing hair and then it sits in the drain and it blocks up things. So that type of stuff also needs to be looked after. You do need to clean it, unfortunately. There are great little traps that you can buy that catch this stuff, and you just clean it out like a Frankie basin. You know, they've got a little trap that acts as the plug as well. Mm-hmm. You can get showers that have that as well. So there are things that you can do to catch all the hair and stuff that go down shower pipes.
Orlando, anything you'd add to that, either from a kitchen drain or a bathroom drain perspective?
No, I fully agree with Angelo in all cases there, but in the case of the toilet, is normally, in some cases, there is an inspection control point after the swan neck where you can still open if you want to get your hands dirty. But yes, sometimes you've got to get in there. Maybe you find a underwear sometimes down the toilet, or you might find even a nappy going down the toilet. And the only thing that can dislodge it sometimes is that you've got to get your hand in there from the back to the inspection port and then be able to pull this item out. If it comes to the basin and so on, we use a Petco drain liquid, which is it's quite a toxic thing, and it heats up the pipe very, very well. And all of these, you throw it down the neck of the basin, and it bubbles and it eats away at all those unwanted impurities that are blocking up the drain. And it does a bit of a chemical reaction, and then before you know it, it blows. You put a lot of cold water down after that, and it cleans out the drain. That works quite well. We sell a lot of that. Along with caustic soda, flakes, and many other things as well. But all around, I think Angelo's covered it.
as I was saying, if you want to start playing with the emergency, I would rather get the plumber in.
You should have seen Angelo's face with your description of sticking your hand in there, Orlando. Okay, point taken. We've dealt with water leaks. We haven't dealt with a very important one, which is the gas leak. A lot of us are using gas stoves these days, so there is a gas outlet into the house. And this is a really tricky one because you don't always notice that it's happening. Orlando, let me start with you. With more and more people using the gas oven or stove, as well as geysers and heaters, what are some of the tips you'd like to share with us about avoiding emergencies or dealing with them when they do happen?
Yes, many times nobody really has any kind of detector that can detect a gas leak, or you get some alarm systems nowadays that is a gas leak detection, and it sends off an alarm similar to a smoke detector, and you do get gas leak detectors, which would cause an alarm to go off. So that's one thing you could obtain. You get also inline gauges that you can couple between the bottle and the appliance, which actually indicates if there is a leak. It feels that drop of pressure due to a leak. But the old method, I still believe, is once you've tightened a bottle, many of people don't have these detectors. Once you've tightened your bottle, get a soapy solution of sunlight liquid and use a brush and just put a bit of sunlight liquid over the surface and look for any bubbles that come out. If you see any bubbles coming from the soapy liquid, you know that there's a leak.
That is very clever.
Maybe go and re-tighten it again, or maybe send that bottle back and get another one where you're sure that once you tighten your your hose onto it that there's no leaks at all. So soapy water works very well.
That's a fantastic idea. I've never heard that one before, but it makes a lot of sense.
Makes a lot of sense. We use it as well when you know, if you're checking for tires and leaks in tires, you put, you pump up the tire and put it in a tube of, in a bucket of water, and you just see the bubbles. So it does. It is a way to check. The other thing, guys, the other thing is there were new regulations posted with regards to gas installation.
Yep.
So you need to follow up on that and make sure you've got a certificate of compliance. It is vitally important for insurance.
Okay, good to know. Also, I think it should go without saying, but let's say it anyway. If you suspect that there might be a gas leak, you need to ventilate the area immediately, I would imagine.
Immediately.
Okay. So open the windows, open the doors, and get some fresh air into that room as soon as you possibly can, and then turn the gas off at the bottle if you suspect it, particularly until you know it's where the leak is happening. Okay, and also, it should go without saying, but don't light a cigarette anywhere in the vicinity or light anything for that matter. Orlando, we can laugh, but I would imagine you've probably seen a good few situations where exactly that has happened.
Well, definitely, you don't want to see those. Those will be massive explosions. So, praise the Lord, I haven't had that kind of a thing. I've had electricity issues where there's been floods and explosions occurring in distribution boards, but not a gas one, because a gas one will be a serious explosion. So I don't want to be there when that happens. Yeah, so electrical problems, I've seen many in the past.
Touch wood. Let's hope it stays that way, Orlando. Okay, final thing to say, Orlando. I mean, we've mentioned a lot of products here that are very useful to have in the house in case these emergencies happen, from fire extinguishers and fire blankets to the various drain unblockers, etc. You can get all of those at your local Brights Hardware. Remind us where your stores are open these days.
Yes, so we're actually getting a 9th store now in a month's time in Sunningdale, close to Tableview by the Table Bay Mall on the R27. So that'll be number 9. But the ones before that, you know, the Boston store, which is now 49, going to be 50 years old next year. So that's the one that's in Boston, but it's Boston. And then we got the Brackengate store that was the old Stickland before, and we moved that about a year or so ago. We moved it from Stickland to Brackengate. So that's near the R300. Opposite the Sonaker Mall. That's the second. Then we have the Blackheath store, which is located on Van Riebeck Road in Blackheath. And then we have the Mitchell's Plain store, which is also in a shopping center called the Watergate Mall, also close to the R300 as you take the turn off to Mitchell's Plain. And then we have the franchise stores made up of Plattekloof, which is on Plattekloof Road in the Plattekloof Village Shopping Center. We have the one in Montague Park, which is opposite the refinery or near the Macro on Plattekloof and Kuberg Road intersection. And then we have the 8th branch, which is located in the back part of Durnville. As you coming from Cape Gate side, going towards 8th Durnville, you'll find a branch on your left-hand side there. We have one in Langebaan, which is the one by Mykonos Crossing, where Club Mykonos is in the shopping mall next to that. And then now this new one in Sunningdale that's happening in a month's time opening.
Good news indeed. Orlando, congrats on the 9th store, and thanks so much for joining us today. Orlando Luis, the CEO of Brights Hardware. We're back after the short break taking some of your open line calls. We've already got SMSs and tweets coming through, but you're welcome to dial in on 021-446-0567.
Cape Talk. Call 021-446-0567.
We're going to squeeze in a few open line DIY calls, but before we do that, we've got Jack on the line from Kenilworth wanting to respond on killing fires in the kitchen. And Jack's got good experience because I believe you were a chef in the Navy. Jack, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you.
What did you want to share with us?
Well, sometimes you turn your back or you get distracted and you got a pan of oil on the thing. Turn your back, you've got a fire in your hands. Just take a big handful of salt, throw that straight on it.
Salt.
And keep throwing that. It kills it. You know,
it smothers really. You want to smother it with something that won't ignite. Okay.
Yes, but the other one is that sometimes you spill oil on the floor. I mean, these things happen, you know.
Yeah.
Don't wipe it up. All that does, it just spreads it. The same thing. Throw salt in it. Just leave it to in there, and the salt will absorb the oil. And after that, you can just wipe it up, scrape it up.
Thanks.
No problem.
Good advice, Jack. Thank you. Angela wants to say something.
Jack just reminded me of something my granny used to do when we used to mess oil or wine on a thing.
I was going to say red wine stains. Yeah. It's the best thing to
salt,
do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the reminder, Jack, and that's useful advice from somebody who must have been used to dealing with fires in a very contained space where it's really important to stamp them out fast. Okay, some open line questions. An SMS one asking whether you know what the minimum width for a common staircase in a block of flats needs to be, and also must there be two staircases?
A Okay, well, first of all, there are regulations on that, but I would suggest that you find out. You can, City Council will give you that, or you can go to an architect. They'll be able to tell you. With regards to a fire escape, generally there's if it's a block of flats, there's two because there's a fire escape as well.
Okay.
But not for a house that I wouldn't know for.
Specifically asking about a block of flats.
Yeah, so then generally they are.
So yes, yeah, so there needs to be two different points of egress from the building. Okay, and there is a specification, but
I just don't have it offhand.
Ask an expert for it, please. Okay, thank you. Right then, Juliana would like to know on the WhatsApp line, what is the best way to deal with rising damp on walls, and which products would you recommend?
Juliana, this is a Cape Town favorite, I think. This and cleaning mold off the shower. Okay, so there are literally three ways of doing it. Well, there's more, but the gist is, number one, you can either just scrape off the loose paint and coat it and do it on a year-to-year basis, okay, or every 6 months, whatever the case might be. And that's simply because water getting into the wall needs to come out, okay. Then you've got the middle of the range, which would be you can chop off the plaster and you can replaster with a tanking type of system, which is a special plaster. And what this does is it actually stops the water that's getting into the wall moving out. However, I'm not a fan of that. I'll tell you why, because water is still getting in. And now if it can't get out, it's going to create a problem. Okay. People also do injections, et cetera, and so forth. That's a way to go. You can inject into the wall. And then the final way would be really to install a proper DPC, but that would mean cutting up, chopping up, digging underground, etc. It's quite a lot of work.
Excuse my ignorance. What's a DPC?
It's a damp-proof course. It's a piece of plastic. So when they lay their foundations, they generally have a piece of plastic on top of that, and then they put the walls up, and that prevents any moisture from underground coming through and up. Now, the old houses don't necessarily have that, and also houses with rising damp. But are built on hills, etc., and so forth, don't necessarily have them all in the right place.
Okay.
So they create problems.
I think we can squeeze in one last comment. And James in Simonstown has WhatsApped to say, be careful, don't use a fire extinguisher in enclosed spaces because it literally takes the oxygen away. You need to open windows.
Sure.
Is that correct?
Correct.
So in the kitchen, you're directing a fire extinguisher at the stove. You've got enough oxygen in the rest of the kitchen, surely. Well, but like at what point does one need to be aware of that?
Well, I think you always just need to be aware of it. I think you need to, these things hold a lot of material.
Okay.
And when you release it, it goes everywhere. I mean, it's a mess. The cleanup afterwards, you don't even want to know about. But the point is, it does. It can, if you've got a very small kitchen that's not open, then you could have a problem. You would need to then open up and ventilate or, you know, wear a mask. These days we're wearing one. But you don't have time for that. So you're going to open, spray, and then get out and get an open up. Generally, opening up happens afterwards. I've seen a fire extinguisher go off in a car, and you don't want to see what happens then. I mean, everyone just came running out like these ghosts coming out of this car. It couldn't have been fun, but it looked funny, but it couldn't have been fun. So yes, they can create problems when you're in an enclosed area. If you've open area, less so.
James, thanks so much for the tip. And Angelo, lovely to have you back with us again. Thanks for popping in.
No problem.
We'll chat again next month.
100%.